Welcome to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast, this time focused on financial reporting for bankruptcy and discontinued operations. Listen to KPMG professionals discuss key points on these complicated areas.
Welcome to this episode of KPMG's Financial Reporting Podcast. This time we're focusing on financial reporting for bankruptcy and discontinued operations. KPMG recently came out with a new handbook on accounting for bankruptcies, and due to the economic downturn in COVID-19, this is likely to be top of mind for a number of accountants and finance professionals. I'm Brian Fields, a partner at KPMG, and in this podcast, I'm visiting with one of the principal authors of the new handbook, Dan Langlois, a partner I work with in KPMG's Department of Professional Practice. Dan, are you ready to have a virtual cup of coffee and discuss bankruptcy accounting?
I sure am, Brian. You know, you've become somewhat of a national celebrity for your KPMG podcasting prowess, so I'm very honored to join as your guest today for this next segment.
Thanks, Dan. I know it's not Oprah, but hopefully we can make sense of a topic that many of us haven't had to deal with for a while. So let's dive right in. I feel like we're dusting off our knowledge in this area from the last recession. We've had a great economy for so long. Can you set the stage for us? What should CFOs and controllers be thinking about if their firms might be heading in this direction?
Yes, Brian, there's a lot going on right now. And certainly in these difficult and uncertain times, I know that CFOs and controllers have a lot to think about and are rightfully focused on what it takes just to run their finance functions today as the country prepares to emerge from a lockdown and as they navigate some of the liquidity challenges presented by the current economic environment. And while financial reporting responsibilities and deadlines may be more flexible today, they've not disappeared altogether. Investors and analysts are thirsty for high-quality financial information. And those responsible for financial reporting should have a goal of providing transparent disclosures to their stakeholders regarding their company's financial situation, particularly when bankruptcy or some other form of financial restructuring may be imminent. The SEC staff has recently reinforced the importance of providing this timely, sufficient, and accurate information to investors while acknowledging the unprecedented challenges that companies are facing. Whether it's a robust liquidity discussion in MD&A or risks and uncertainties disclosures in the footnotes, companies in financial distress have an obligation to timely disclose information that clearly depicts the effects that COVID-19 and the economic downturn are having on their business. The accounting literature that applies to companies that are already in Chapter 11 bankruptcy is Topic 852. For companies contemplating the possibility of a bankruptcy filing, there are some key accounting and presentation issues to be aware of as they move through the various stages of bankruptcy. First, as they approach a bankruptcy filing, and the second stage, once they are in bankruptcy, and finally, as they emerge from Chapter 11. And our handbook that you mentioned at the outset is organized around these three phases.
Okay, thanks, Dan. Let's double click on each of those three stages. And let's start with the before stage. Are there any key considerations you'd highlight for CFOs and controllers there?
Well, one key item to keep in mind is that until a Chapter 11 case is filed with the bankruptcy court, companies are going to follow normal GAAP. However, the facts and circumstances causing them to contemplate bankruptcy may trigger some incremental accounting considerations given their financial situation. Some examples of those accounting issues that take on increased importance ahead of bankruptcy include, but aren't limited to, the impairment of goodwill and long-lived assets, troubled debt restructurings, debt extinguishments, the application of hedge accounting, loss contingencies, going concern, and so on. And let's take debt arrangements, for example. A company at risk of filing Chapter 11 may attempt to renegotiate the terms of its debt to, say, decrease the interest rate or increase the term, maybe modify the contractual terms in some other ways in order to improve its cash flows or relieve some of the pressure of those obligations. These actions trigger important accounting considerations, but remember, we're following normal GAAP pre-bankruptcy, so folks want to think about the accounting guidance around troubled debt restructurings and debt modifications at that time. Also, a company facing financial difficulty may be in violation of debt covenants or may be in danger of creditors exercising subjective acceleration clauses on its long-term debt. These are clauses that allow the creditor to accelerate the scheduled maturities of the loan under conditions that are not objectively determinable, which makes them subjective by nature. Circumstances such as recurring losses or liquidity problems could cause creditors to exercise their acceleration rights. And if it's considered probable that the creditor will invoke the acceleration clause, the company should reclassify debt that otherwise is long-term to current. Note that a violation of a covenant or an acceleration clause in one debt agreement could trigger violations in other debt agreements that contain cross-default covenants. The reclassification of debt to current liabilities may also have a negative impact on projected liquidity because of timing or the company's ability to continue as a going concern. These circumstances may cause the company to take other actions, Brian, to improve its liquidity situation.
Got it. And in the best case, some of those actions might actually put a company on more solid ground so they can avoid bankruptcy altogether. For instance, selling a business might raise much-needed funds. Maybe as a sidebar, can you refresh our memories on when a sold business should be reclassified to discontinued operations?
Sure, Brian. You know, the reporting of discontinued operations in one respect indicates that a company is undergoing a significant change to its operations and financial results. And it shows the effect of such a change to the users of the company's financial statements, allowing them to better understand the operations that will continue into the future. A component of an entity that has been sold or is classified as discontinued operations, if that disposal represents a couple key terms here, strategic shift that has a major effect on the entity's operations and financial results. Let me touch on each one of those. The first concept is this idea of a strategic shift. And there's no gap definition of strategic shift, Brian, but it often involves a change in how the operations of an entity are organized and managed, how operating segments might be identified, or how the nature of the business and operations are disclosed by the entity. Now, that second condition I mentioned is that the disposal has a major effect on the entity's operations and financial results. This requires considering both some qualitative and quantitative impacts that the disposal has on the reported results of the overall business. And there's no bright line tests in this area, and therefore there's judgment that's required, and you need to consider all facts and circumstances in order to conclude that you have the appropriate presentation as discontinued operations. We also released another new handbook, Brian, on discontinued operations that provides some good guidance and examples, I think, on how to apply these judgments.
Thanks, Dan. That's a great refresher. And I'm hearing the message, which is before bankruptcy, you're applying normal GAAP, but there are some things to think about relative to liquidity and those impacts. Let's move on now to the during bankruptcy stage. And this is where we get into what I think of as bankruptcy lingo, terms like debtor in possession and liabilities subject to compromise. How does all that work for financial reporting? Can you break it down for us?
Yeah, that lingo can be complicated or confusing. So you're right, Brian. It's helpful to understand that and have a basic foundational understanding before you get into the accounting. And remember, there's several different types of bankruptcies in the U.S., but for purposes of this discussion, we'll focus on Chapter 11. And Chapter 11 provides a company to reorganize its financial affairs through a court-approved plan that'll either modify, reduce, or eliminate some of the company's debts and other liabilities. And it allows those business operations of the company to continue during the bankruptcy proceedings. The bankruptcy accounting guidance makes reference to the U.S. Bankruptcy Code and that lingo you mentioned in several places. So understanding some of the legal terminology is important. A company in Chapter 11 is considered the debtor in possession. That's a term you see in the financial statements. During bankruptcy will be labeled as debtor in possession till emergence. The filing of Chapter 11 provides important protections to the debtors, including the automatic stay provisions. And these provisions will prohibit creditors from taking certain actions against the company, such as efforts to collect or assess and recover claims and other liabilities, or the initiation or continuation of lawsuits. It basically gives the company a chance to breathe. Now, liabilities incurred by the company before the filing for bankruptcy are called pre-petition liabilities. And those incurred after are post-petition liabilities. That makes sense. Now, pre-petition liabilities are claims that are filed with the bankruptcy court for amounts owed to vendors and other creditors as of the filing date. Pre-petition liabilities can be either subject to compromise or not subject to compromise. A pre-petition liability is subject to compromise if the creditors might not recover the full amount that they're owed. This might be the case, for example, if the claim is either undersecured or unsecured altogether. In contrast, post-petition liabilities are never subject to compromise. Make sense?
Yeah, that's a great crash course, Dan. So what does that mean for the books?
Well, on the financial reporting side, there's several things you need to think about. And one thing you certainly need to think about is that the financial statements are going to look a little bit different while you're in Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The liabilities subject to compromise that I mentioned earlier, they'll be called out separately on the balance sheet. And certain adjustments resulting from applying bankruptcy accounting will be captured in this new special line item on the income statement called reorganization items. The accounting guidance to be applied by a company operating under Chapter 11 protection is not particularly extensive. You know, it primarily focuses on certain liabilities and presentation matters in the financial statements. And the accounting for the asset side of the balance sheet is largely unaffected, and normal GAAP will continue to apply to those assets. When it comes to liabilities, in some cases, it may be difficult to understand how the guidance in Topic A52 intersects with the broad U.S. GAAP requirements that will continue to apply as well. Now, the needs of the financial statement users will change during bankruptcy, and the accounting literature tries to meet those needs by requiring the bankrupt entity to do a couple of things. Number one, you know, distinguish transactions and events that are directly associated with the bankruptcy proceedings from a company's normal operations and call them out separately, like I mentioned, as either liability subject to compromise or those reorganization items. And secondly, the entity is going to measure certain liabilities based on amounts expected to be approved for payment by the court. That's an important, you know, terminology and thing to think about with respect to those measurement items. Now, pre-petition liabilities that are subject to compromise, again, meaning that they're likely to be paid upon emergence at an amount that's less than what was originally owed, are presented separately on the balance sheet and are from those that are not subject to compromise. And although liabilities subject to compromise are usually settled at amounts that are less than the allowed claim amount, they are measured and reporting during bankruptcy at the amount that is expected to be allowed by the court, with any adjustments to the prior carrying amount reported through the reorganization line item. Let me give you an example, maybe to break it down a little bit. So let's say we've got a company entering bankruptcy. It owes a lender for an unsecured loan that becomes a liability subject to compromise. If the amount of the claim was $500 and the company expects the court will initially allow this amount, then $500 is continued to be reported as a liability. But if prior to emergence, the court adjusts the allowed claim down to $475 because, for example, of a disallowed late payment fee, then that liability is reduced by the company and the offsetting $25 adjustment is recorded as a reorganization item in the P&L. The company will continue to carry the liability at the amount allowed by the court, the $475 in this example, during bankruptcy, even though it's expected that the lender may only be paid cents on the dollar upon emergence. And then when it comes to contingencies and certain other types of liabilities, this process may be more difficult in trying to sort out, you know, the amounts expected to be allowed by the courts, and thus some judgment is going to be required.
Okay, great. Well, that takes us to the third phase, accounting, you know, after bankruptcy and emerging from bankruptcy. I know for certain bankruptcies, we end up with fresh start accounting, but that's not always the case. What should people know about that?
Well, Brian, fresh start accounting is kind of like it sounds. It reflects the fact that the company is starting over with a new basis of accounting and is considered a new financial reporting entity. Applying fresh start accounting is very similar to the fair value approach concepts that we're all familiar with in business combination accounting when a change in control occurs. But you're right, not all companies will qualify for fresh start accounting. Fresh start accounting only applies when an emerging entity meets two tests. One is essentially a solvency test, and the other is a loss of control test. On the solvency test, it's based off of a term called reorganization value, which is, you know, a term introduced by the accounting literature, and essentially it measures the amount that a third party would be willing to pay for the emerging entity's assets upon emerging from Chapter 11. And it compares that value to the amount of liabilities that are owed. And if those liabilities exceed that asset value, then you would meet that first test. The second test is essentially looking at the voting shares of the entity before and after and who holds them. So if there's been essentially a loss of control by those previous shareholders, you would meet that second test. And when both of these tests are met, the emerging entity must then apply fresh start accounting, which again is similar to the business combination exercise and assets and liabilities are fair valued. Now, a black line will be used in the financial statements to separate the predecessor and successor periods, and any adjustments to the assets and liabilities as a result of applying those fresh start accounting adjustments are recorded as reorganization items, that special line item in the predecessor P&L. Now, an emerging company that does not qualify for fresh start accounting will apply other GAAP and will not have that black line presentation. Liabilities that were in fact compromised are stated at the present value of the amounts to be paid in accordance with the plan of reorganization that was approved by the bankruptcy court. Now, as you can probably guess, Brian, there are some challenges in applying the guidance when emerging from bankruptcy, and the financial statement presentation and disclosure requirements are complicated and unique. Our handbook provides some good examples to help guide our listeners through that process.
Thanks, Dan. This is a timely topic, and while it's sad to see an uptick in bankruptcies in the wake of COVID-19, I also know the bankruptcy process is one of the ways we work out financial problems and redeploy assets in a good way. And while bankruptcy is a legal process, accountants have a key role to play in making sure stakeholders get the right information from start to finish. Dan, you've given our listeners a great overview of financial reporting considerations around bankruptcy and some of the key considerations at each stage of the process. Thanks for swinging by and having a virtual cup of coffee with me.
No problem, Brian, anytime. And of course, our listeners can always find our published guidance online at Financial Reporting View.
Thanks for listening to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. To see our in-depth guidance on accounting for bankruptcies and discontinued operations, take a look at our reference library at frv.kpmg.us. Stay safe and stay tuned for more on this important topic.